The Tom Woods Show, episode 2017.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and fail to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm talking today to Dan Hagen, a musician, a really great musician, by the way. I got to know back in the old days, now it almost chokes me up to think about it, the days of the Contra Cruise. May it rest in peace, 2016 to 2020, or to 2019, I beg your pardon. We had some great times there. Dan was with us every time as an indispensable ingredient of it. And if you are a listener of the Bob Murphy Show, you know that it begins with Bob's song. Is it called Get to Higher Ground?
It is.
And did you guys write it together?
We did. We co-wrote it and I produced it and, you know, played several of the instruments on it.
All right. So tell us a little bit more. Now, you and I just had a nice time just sitting, having coffee and shooting the breeze when I was passing through Nashville last week. But tell the folks a little bit more about you and what you do and throw in the libertarian angle while you're at it.
Sure. So, you know, I've been doing music all my life. I've been in Nashville, Tennessee for 21 years, and I've made a career mostly as a, you know, side guitarist, touring guitarist for, you know, every kind of artist in every style you could imagine, as a studio musician, as a producer. You know, I started producing artists, and that led me into eventually creating a jingle production business. And I was, you know, doing music for reality shows for CMT, MTV. I was doing Tennessee Lottery spots. I had written the theme song for LP Building Product. So every time I went to LP Field to see a Titans game, they'd play my song. And, you know, that industry kind of crashed for the most part. I had the last bit of what you could really make some good money doing that. And around 2008, when the economy kind of tanked, that industry kind of slipped away and I started focusing more on producing independent artists. And, you know, it was probably around, you know, 2010, something like that was kind of my political awakening. And that's when I started to question everything. And that's when I became a big Ron Paul fan. 2012, I went down to Tampa, which was the first time I met you, Tom, was down in Tampa. And, you know, I went down there, I went to Paul Fest, and I went down there to network, to support Ron Paul. And one of the things I had to face is that I really wanted to be performing at Paul Fest, but I had to realize I was maybe new to the libertarian scene, hadn't established myself enough as an artist to be known, to be asked to perform. So I said, well, I'll change that. I'll show up, I'll network, I'll meet these artists and kind of insert myself in the scene. And, you know, that's kind of what I did. I met some of the great artists down there and developed relationships with them. And when I saw that, you know, the RNC and the media pretty much stole the election from Ron Paul, I was, you know, super frustrated driving home back to Nashville. And I said, you know, well, what am I going to do about it? You know, and I said, well, we can't just vote for a grassroots president that follows the Constitution. So what am I going to do about it? So I, you know, back to Ron Paul saying, if there's going to be a real revolution in this country, there'll have to be music. And I said, well, I do music. I could, you know, I like this formula that they had for this festival. I'll create my own festival. And that I created Music City Liberty Festival. And that's actually how I met Bob Murphy, because a mutual friend said, hey, you've got to know Bob and you've got to have him speak at your event. Because I had 12 musical artists, 12 speakers like Bob, and we had vendor tables. And so the artists that we had perform were a combination of people, you know, like the Jordan Page, Rebel Inc., Tatiana Moroz, people that had established themselves in the libertarian kind of music scene. But because I found it hard for myself to break into that scene, I decided to kind of open up the tent a little wider and bring in some local artists. I didn't, because the intention of the whole festival and most of my activism has been local, Music City. Almost everything I've created as an entity, Music City Liberty Festival, Music City Friends of Liberty, which was the entity that I created that, you know, I used to produce music with Bob Murphy that ended up being his theme show music. And it was an entity I created with local artists after I'd burned out. You know, I did Music City Liberty Festival, Atlanta Music Liberty Festival with a friend, Barbie Dunn, and she was an investor and helped me organize that. And I kind of burned out on this concept of doing this huge festival because it took 6 months of my life booking it. I wasn't making any money. And you know how it is when you organize anything with libertarians, there's a bunch of backseat drivers that tell you they could do better, even though they do nothing at all. And so, you know, I eventually kind of, it moved to a smaller focus, like four artists, and we would have Bob MC it. And that kind of parlayed into Bob going, hey, you know, I said, well, Bob, if you'd like to sing some karaoke, you know, at one of these events, you could do that. And he's like, well, you know, there's a band here, you know, that would be fun to play with the band. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's do that. And that's how I started doing music with Bob, and that, you know, created the opportunity to perform on the cruise ships that we did, those amazing adventures that were just incredible things that, you know, times we'll never forget. Well, about 6 months before the pandemic, I created an entity called Music City Revival. And so we have a website, musiccityrevival.live. And what that has turned into is a record label. And I'm producing Liberty-based artists. I'm producing a track called The Great Awakening right now with an artist, Amy Pfeiffer. And that's kind of the answer to the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum's, you know, Great Reset, The Great Awakening. And so, you know, people told me, you know, 6 months, you know, when I created this entity, people said, well, you know, why does Music City need a revival? And then comes the tornadoes, the pandemic, and you know, riots and all these things. And, you know, people don't ask me that anymore. And I felt like I was led to do that. And, you know, one of the things that we got involved in that I wanted to really be a cornerstone is I wanted to help my friend Liz Shaw, who ironically, I'm at Toy Box Studio right now, who with, you know, Liz Shaw recording at Liz's studio, which is an incredible studio to record at. And I know Liz was a guest on the Tom Wood Show. Liz is a remarkable human being because he showed us locally how to stand up to our local government, our city council. And I helped him overturn a law that made it illegal to record in your home studios, if you can imagine that, in Nashville, Tennessee, and Music City. And Liz stood up. He won a Grammy for a record that was mixed at his home studio. And the city sent him a cease and desist order. And they used this law that they had, quote unquote law, that said you can't basically have any home-based business and have a client in your home and profit at all, which was totally insane. And, you know, long story short, Liz stood up against them, sued them, got interviewed by Billboard magazine, Rolling Stone magazine, the Tennessean, put together a change.org petition, got 160,000 signatures very quickly. And that awakened the whole music community in Nashville that, hey, this is a major problem. They could do this to any of us. And we ended up getting a local council member to draw up an amendment. And we won, and we showed up in mass. We outnumbered the blue-haired commies that would, you know, were the only people that would show up to the council meetings. And we had a victory. And the irony is, we had this victory where it became legal to work in our home. And 1 week later, you know, because of the pandemic, they locked us down and forced us to work from home. And so, you know, I got very involved against the lockdowns. I was stood up very boldly, actually led a protest to Mayor Cooper's home. We did it legally.
Wait. Now you're doing the whole episode.
Okay.
I just wanted some background about who you are and that stuff. Well, now we're going to get into the stuff that I want to talk to you about. Now, we have a couple of episodes worth of material because as we were talking at the coffee shop, it came out that you have some stuff to say about the federal government and music and musicians and its role, you say, not a favorable one in all this. So we will return to that. But for now, I was really interested to hear what you had to say about music and COVID and all that. I hadn't really realized, despite all the newsletter stuff I had done, that with the exception of Nashville, I mean, you expect that a blue city with a blue mayor is going to probably fall for this stuff. But I hadn't realized that with the exception of that, by and large, Tennessee had actually been one of the better states. And somehow it managed to keep a low profile as compared to, say, South Dakota or Florida. So that was very encouraging. And then even in Nashville now, even with Cooper, it seemed pretty normal to me. There, you know, very few masks and mostly normal behavior from normal people. I was able to get into a concert at a very well-known and venerable venue without having to take a test or show proof of vaccination. So I was happy to see that because I just remember when this first hit, you and I are friends on Facebook. I was following your posts and I thought, oh my gosh, what would life be like right now being a musician, not knowing what the future holds at all? So I was very pleased to hear that things kind of turned out well for you because you pivoted a bit and you rolled the punches, you figured out what to do. But I mean, it just must have been a sense of utter despair.
It was, Tom. And, you know, the toughest thing about it, and I can relate to your friend Clifton that you had on, you know, was being so let down by the music community that was so willing to cave to every demand. And you realized very quickly that the weaknesses musicians had in understanding economics at all, you know, this concept that, you know, I told them from the beginning, economics matters. You can't just unplug the economy. And they literally didn't understand that. And that was one of the most frustrating things. And then to stand up was to be vulnerable to cancel culture, literally sending hundreds of people, you know, attacking me on all my social media sites. And, you know, they tried to blackball me. And, you know, I'm a self-made man. I'm a self-made producer. So I really wasn't worried about that. I kind of pivoted a long time ago that in all the things that led up to, you know, me playing on your cruise ship, I had kind of invested my career in the Liberty Movement and was producing artists. So I kind of already was moving that way. But, you know, one of the things that is important to point out, too, is that part of the reason why you had the benefit of not having to wear a mask in Nashville now was we defeated another mask mandate. And this is part of this local movement that we created in Nashville that I'm very proud to be a part of, a group called Free Tennessee. There's a guy, Gary Humble, who's been drafting legislation. And on every level, we've stood up to our government in Nashville and Tennessee. And yeah, just recently, the city council tried to pass another mask mandate. And this time, they didn't even have the authorization of the health director. And so they would have no ability illegally really to execute it, yet they tried to do it. And we amassed numbers and we emailed our city council. We got very involved. And by the way, Liz Shaw is somebody who's become a great friend and, you know, advocate. I told him, we started talking about this because, you know, he knows how to get in touch with all the city council. They all know who he is. And I said, you've got to go to Tom Wood's website and you've got to get the data that he's collected. He's been collecting incredible data. And that's what he did. He used your data to send the real information en masse to all the council members. So because we got involved locally, we defeated another mask mandate and therefore we don't have to wear masks.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. And you guys are doing great. And as I say, it was really vibrant there. I've traveled around the country quite a bit since this whole thing. And I have been to places where I've seen a lot of places shuttered and I haven't seen a lot of activity, and it's like some places are like a ghost town. But wow, Nashville sure seemed pretty lively to me. But I guess what I want to know is you as a musician living there may have to operate under stricter rules than I as a mere spectator would have to. So
yes.
Are there places you used to play where you can't get in now?
There's about 20 venues that are very significant, popular venues in Nashville that I've made a great portion of my career performing at that I can no longer perform at because I don't have the proper medical procedure. And the irony about that is I have done so much proactive, work on my own health that I literally have not been sick in 11 years. And so there's people walking around that are obese and coughing and have the sniffles that can get in these venues, and I can't. And I won't even, technically, some of these venues, I could take a COVID swab and, within 24 hours, but I won't do that on pure principle. I was very frustrated when I saw it. It was this whole woke kind of race to comply. These venues, mandated themselves. This wasn't the federal government saying you have to do this. They volunteered to do it because you have highly misinformed people. When I saw that they were doing that and I saw what that meant for me, I put up a Facebook post saying, I will no longer support these venues. I will only welcome them to bankruptcy and the laws of the free market because, just from an economic standpoint, take one of these particular venues. I'll say their name, the Five Spot. That, that's a place where we performed many times with Music City Friends of Liberty with Bob. We had Adam Kokesh in there and we talked to people about Obamacare as we rocked them out and we weren't even thrown out of the club. Well, they were one of the first venues to volunteer to do this, vaccine mandate. And just 1 month before, they had a GoFundMe, begging for money to keep their doors open. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, what did they meet with their woke accountant who said, I think, the best thing you could do is only serve 40% of your clients, the ones that no longer have jobs and are super sick because they followed all the procedures and stayed at home. And the people that actually still have jobs and supported you during the pandemic, now they can't support you. I mean, it makes no sense at all from an economic standpoint. And clearly these people don't understand economics. And there's been a couple venues so far that did these mandates that have been around, in the 21 years I've been here. There's the Mercy Lounge, Cannery Ballroom, and the High Watt were three venues connected. They're highly successful. They did this mandate and they announced not long after, within a couple months, that they're going out of business, and that's probably going to happen to all of them. And, they've done this to themselves. So that's incredibly frustrating. It's very awkward now. People don't realize what you're doing when you're doing something like that, because you're talking about not only local artists, you're talking about touring artists. And I've seen bands, splinter in half because two of the members are adamant about there's no way they're getting this procedure. And hey, maybe they have an autoimmune disease or whatever it is. This is not right for them. They don't want to do it. Well, they can't plan a tour, looking around at venues. If half the venues they go on tour do these mandates and the other half, there's no way. It's almost impossible. So you're seeing bands splinter in half. You're seeing a whole community in turmoil. And at ends, and it's really done unbelievable things, and it makes no sense at all.
And incidentally, I know we're focusing on music right now, but just the other day, I saw somebody saying that the decision about whether or not to vaccinate their child just broke up somebody's marriage. Well, if it broke up that one marriage, it's broken up a bunch of them, or it's put serious strain on families, as this whole thing has.
Yes.
Because half the family believes the BS, even after 2 years of it not working. And the only explanation they have is we haven't done enough of it. Okay. I mean, if you were to take a medicine and you keep dying of it over and over and over, I don't understand why people's immediate response is maybe we didn't take enough of it. No, maybe you did too much. Right?
It's not even an option in the framework of how they think that they're actually contributing to their own demise, you know, financially, health-wise, on every level. When you know, anybody who's just looking at all the data and looking at common sense, I mean, when I look at my Facebook page, it's all my friends that are vaccinated that are sick all the time. As a matter of fact, one of the venues that you know, that the owner of, when I put that post on Facebook about the fact that I won't be supporting these venues, one of the venue owners got on my Facebook page and he said, well, that's a lot of venues to never support again, which is ironic because it was him choosing, you know, for me not to be able to support his, you know, him not supporting my business. And, you know, he was basically kind of pointing the finger at me. And it's one of those things, I really have no choice in the situation. But just the week after that, he came down with COVID and he had to announce it publicly. And of course he said, well, you know, there was one time where I walked from the stage to the bathroom and I wasn't wearing a mask, and, you know, and it's, there was no, you know, he says, well, this is a breakthrough case. Well, you know, every single one of my friends that are following this policy seems to have a breakthrough case. Is it possible they aren't breakthrough cases? They're actually getting sick because the procedures they're following is causing them to get sick. But that's not a possibility. And that's very odd.
He hasn't even kept up with the mask propaganda, because the point of the mask, it was never to protect you, right? It's protect other people. Yeah, if you were to still believe all this. Now, there are people in certain fields where in that field you hear, well, look, some people, if subject to a vaccine mandate, would, even though they don't want to take the vaccine, buckle just because they don't want to lose their jobs. But nevertheless, there appear to be, let's say, 10% of people in such and such field who just over their dead body are going to take it. And even losing 10% in some field would have very, very serious effects. Now, I want to ask you about this in music, because you mentioned my interview with Clifton Duncan, the Broadway actor. Now, they're all a bunch of robots. I mean, every Broadway actor has absolutely identical opinions on every single issue, including whether or not I should get this injection. I mean, every single one of them has exactly the same opinion. And he says that, of course, we know what everybody who, just anybody who wants to be in a Broadway show. And so you have a huge, huge number of unemployed actors. So if you say, I'm not going along with this, this is not exactly going to make it to the mayor's office, because there's always somebody to replace you in this particular field. It's not a case where there's a substantial minority of holdouts and that's going to maybe make them think twice. There just isn't. Or if there is, they're swamped by all the people who could replace them. I feel like the same is true in music. And so you can't necessarily say, well, a whole bunch of us are just going to refuse to perform and then we'll see what happens. It's more a matter of you're waiting for all these requirements to dampen consumer demand for these venues so much that the venues can't survive.
Yeah, you know, and it's important to also, though we can also pinpoint that, hey, yes, you're missing out on some opportunities because you're not going to take the vaccine. And so these 20 venues in Nashville, you can't perform at. It's also equally valid and important to point out that the same characters that will take all the procedures they tell them to do are the very people that waited forever to take a gig. They lived in fear at home, you know, living under their beds in fear of a virus. Well, what happened was a lot of, say, younger people with a good attitude who weren't living in fear, they went out and they took those gigs. And they got those opportunities when, say, like on lower Broadway, when there's so much competition and people willing to play down there. Well, guess what? If you decide you don't want to work and those clubs are open, and you know, there's only like 2 weeks where those Broadway clubs were closed down, well, somebody else came along and replaced you. So, and those people, you know, music is one of those things that if you're not out there networking on the scene, you're not going to have work next year. Like, you have to be out there 9 months ahead. Hey guys, I'm still here. You know, the point is the people who were not living in fear, including myself, we have been working and playing shows the whole time. I never stopped playing shows. And so, yes, there's a, you know, conglomeration of clubs I can't work at, but I've already replaced those opportunities with, like, you know, being an activist and performing, say, you know, a woman called me who's become a great friend of mine, Kate, asked me to perform in front of the health department. We had doctors and attorneys and all kinds of powerful people, legislators, and it was a protest in front of the health department and that everything locked down. Well, you know, now Kate, who owns an academy that's like a fame of music and the arts, she's hired me. As a matter of fact, I go teach there today. I'm, you know, teaching guitar, bass, different instruments at their academy. So, you know, I've also been performing at, you know, I was performing at protest churches and many paid opportunities, and those parlayed into artists that I'm producing. So though I can look at the opportunities I've missed, the truth is I've replaced them with far greater opportunities, people that I want to surround myself with that are good, ethical people. Like that academy is a place where we can have open conversations in the lobby like this, because the parents are taking their children to an academy like that because they know that they're in good hands, and these are not going to, they're not going to have the kind of teachers that are going to force the kids to wear masks and, you know, indoctrinate them. So what I have seen in my life is, for all of my haters, they can hate me all the way to the bank because I'm thriving. And because that's what I've chose, I create opportunities. And in the grand scheme of things, most musicians are not innovators, they're not entrepreneurs, they're a bunch of followers. So I see the old music industry at best, you know, even pre-pandemic, was like arranging chairs on the Titanic. It's a big bubble. It's no longer serving the people. And so I'm looking ahead and going, well, guess what's going to replace that? Music, the people sing about truth, you know, about the things that actually matter, about the things that we're facing. You know, hey, Let's Go Brandon was number one on iTunes and beat out Adele. You know, what does that tell you? There is a grassroots movement. The market is demanding, and they want real and truthful music. And the musicians and artists that are willing to step in and provide that music, I think, are going to do very well. So my entrepreneurial, you know, mindset is focused on that reality, and not just because I think that's where the money's going to be, because that's where my life, my desires, my goals are, my ethics. And it just happens to be that I can see from an entrepreneurial standpoint, that's also going to be where the money is, you know? And as time goes on, I think more will follow us when they will see it's that whole concept of the sunshine patriot. You know, once that movement is successful, well, everybody will want to write truth music and liberty music. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time, there'll be two kinds of people in the future in terms of dealing with your kids and your grandkids. There will be those that tell their grandkids, I was against the lockdowns, I was against all the government procedures. The people that will have the right to say, yeah, I was against those things. And then the people that will lie and say they were against those things. I don't think that there will be any popular standpoint, once history can look at this, that any of this was a good decision. So I'm pretty optimistic that I have some pretty firm ground. And, you know, I knew that taking a hard stance early would hurt me early, but, you know, the truth has stronger teeth every day. And I knew in the long run, I'd be just fine. And I am. I'm doing great. I have about 10 income streams. And I have no problem with some of those being outside of music. And quite honestly, Tom, I turn down more opportunities now with music than I even take, because if the music isn't great, if it doesn't, you know, pay me what I'm worth, and if it isn't around good people that will treat me with respect, I'll take a pass.
Well, of course, that's exactly how I feel. Hey, everybody, we're going to take a quick break so I can improve your life via this sponsor message from Persist SEO. If you're getting buried by your competition online, well, build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. Or are you a small local business? You're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry? Increase your visibility with Persist SEO. What if you have few or zero leads coming in on a consistent basis? Well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model. Are you tired of cold calling and networking, meeting places getting shut down? Use your website as a lead generation engine. Or how about not showing up for your services on Google or other search engines in your area? Get found on Google with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. Persist SEO can help you with all these things and more. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. I want to make sure we don't end this conversation without hearing about exactly what you did with regard to that protest at Mayor Cooper's house. Now, did you organize that? And why his house? Why not the state house or someplace else?
So I had been thinking about this for quite some time, though I'd been involved in protests at the Capitol. And, and doing that early on was one of the things that caused a lot of the musicians to kind of stand up and try to cancel me. They didn't like that I was involved in that. But I'd realized that Mayor Cooper really doesn't care about us going to the Capitol. That is so far away from him. And I said, he's inconvenienced our homes. I had this vision of doing a protest at his home, but I wanted to be the antithesis of BLM. I didn't want to step foot on his property. I didn't want to block traffic. And that was the conundrum. The other conundrum was that I actually had a real estate agent friend that was liberty-minded. I said, can you get me Mayor Cooper's address? And she did it. And, I had it and I sat on it. And to be completely honest, I was scared to put it out there publicly in this Free Tennessee group that had amassed thousands of loyal liberty lovers in Tennessee. Because I thought, if this gets out there and I get credited for releasing this, this was around the time period where BLM was burning things down. I thought, well, what if they put my address out there and they come and just, steal my guitars and burn my place down and my cat dies or something like that. I thought, and that was something I finally had to just face it and go, you know what? Whatever comes, this is the right thing to do. And though I'm scared of it, this is a fear I have to face because I'm all about facing my fears. So I had a friend, Matt Hunley, and we were actually going to speak to the local sheriff and see if there's, any way to kind of, talk to him and see if it was a constitutional sheriff. We realized that wasn't a possibility because Nashville they combined the city and county municipalities, which kind of neutered the power of a constitutional sheriff. So one day I said to Matt, I said, let's plan a protest at Mayor Cooper's home. And I didn't know exactly what it would look like. And, we brought the idea to a couple friends. This all happened within less than a week. We organized this and we implemented it. And we got a lot of people involved, really quickly. And we actually had somebody, I had a friend reach out to me and he said, I'm talking to the police about this. And believe me, they can't stand Mayor Cooper. And he said, but if we step foot on his property, they're going to have to come arrest us. They're going to have to get involved. They don't want to. They want, so we consulted them and realized about the only thing we could do was kind of a driving by and not the conventional drive by, that we hear about in rap songs or mafia movies, but just literally driving by his home. So we had about 40 or 50 cars. We had two McLarens up front. We had a guy that worked at a car dealership. And they had American flags and Don't Tread on Me flags. And we drove by his home, probably 7 to 10 times and honked our horns. I had a megaphone that was handed to me because of my loud mouth. And we invited the news. Channel 2 showed up and they had me driving around with my Ford Focus saying Cooper for prison 2020. And, you know, it was a very successful protest. And then we took it down to Lower Broadway. We had a lot of support. And, you know, the Channel 2 did their report on our event, and it was actually incredibly favorable. We used borrowed from the energy that was hot with Mayor Cooper. Basically, somebody in his administration leaked emails that he had targeted the Broadway venues for closure, yet the data did not support that at all. And that went public. And so for the first time, everybody turned on Mayor Cooper. And I took a very hard stance very early, which I'm sure you noticed. And I caught a lot of flack, but I knew he was corrupt and I knew that it would eventually turn on him. And I didn't change my tone and my beliefs. And eventually time caught up where then all of Nashville, including the left, turned on him because he also implemented a 37% property tax increase. And there's all kinds of corruption, how they overturned that and changed their rules and all that kind of stuff. But it was the right, you know, the right timing because we actually had a lot of support. And I found out later that Mayor Cooper was not happy about that. And I said, well, that's right. That was the goal. I wanted him. Now, this is an amazing thing, Tom, this whole concept of when the people fear their government, there's tyranny. When the government fears the people, there's liberty. You know, his $1.9 million mansion, you know, the gate was wide open. And I thought, wow, what, you know, though I had no intention of doing any harm, any violence, I would never think of such a thing. And I wouldn't have allowed anybody else to do that. That was not the goal. It was just to make notice, put him in check. But the fact that he had his gate open and he had no fear that all the businesses and industries he was closing and families he was destroying, that there could be no repercussions. But, you know, I haven't, you know, driven by for quite some time, but I'd like to imagine he probably keeps that gate closed after our little protest. So, you know, that's kind of how that evolved.
Wow. So you have really been at the center of this whole thing, really from the get-go. When would you say things, I mean, did they reopen? I mean, I was walking down Broadway and it is so full of life. And I understand that the locals don't generally go there, but that doesn't matter. In fact, if anything, it's more significant that it was lively without out-of-towners because it goes to show that travel has resumed. But to imagine that vibrant place being dead quiet and like a ghost town is a tough thing to imagine, even I would think for a guy like you who's a local who generally doesn't go there. Just the thought of that just seems wrong.
It was brutal. It was brutal to see all of that happen. And, you know, that is a huge part of the lifeblood of our economy, you know, that, and, you know, not only was it closed for a period of time, then we had the BLM riots and they went down there and trashed some places. And then we had the Christmas bombing last year. And, you know, and that was another thing. I was, to be honest, I was scared that there was a chance fear could win in that whole Christmas bombing, that people might be scared of coming to Nashville. And it was not 2 weeks later, they started coming back in droves. And it was really a great victory in my mind that fear did not win in that case. So yeah, Nashville is more busy than pre-pandemic. And you know, I would say that a big part of that, we are the it city. You know, I've been in Nashville for 21 years. My first 10 years, I had many friends saying to me, Dan, do you still live in Memphis? And I'm like, nope, never lived in Memphis. But because Nashville was not on the radar, that would never happen now because everybody knows Nashville. Well, it seems to me that the data is showing that people are mass moving to Florida, Tennessee, and Texas. It turns out they want to pay less taxes. Their corporations are moving here. And what they all three have in common is no state income tax as well. And so we're learning in real time that all these blue city, you know, blue state policies are a total, you know, if anything else, an economic failure, and they're pushing people out. And Tennessee is saying, yeah, we'll take your business. Come here. Tennessee is red. You know, Nashville is blue, but there's also a powerful movement, a conservative movement that I'm very happy to see. The Candace Owens show is here, Daily Caller, Ben Shapiro. And I might not be on the same page with Ben on a lot of things, but boy, he's come a long way in the last 10 years. And, you know, there's a powerful conservative libertarian movement that is forming in Nashville. And, you know, one powerful thing that happened after that protest, I was asked to go to a meeting at this mansion in Brentwood, and that there were going to be some powerful people there. And you know, there was people like Carol Swain, who's an incredible leader that actually ran against Mayor Cooper for mayor. She's a Black conservative that I voted to run against mayor, who's been incredibly firm and solid on her stances and all of this COVID stuff. There was Gary Humble there, who is just a powerful, I'd say the greatest advocate for liberty we have in Tennessee. He writes legislation. He's been very involved with the legislature, you know, overturning some of these policies, you know, that will keep businesses from implementing some of these things. There's, you know, I was in a room with some really powerful people, and I thought, why am I in this room? How am I worthy enough? And you know, it was an interesting moment when I was sitting next to Carol, and we really kind of enjoyed each other's energy. And she goes, you know, Dan, I like that there's anarchists like you in this movement. We need people like you that will show up and do things like, you know, what you did. So, you know, there's a powerful movement in Nashville that is brewing, and I'm optimistic that it can help kind of overturn this you know, kind of a majority of blue, you know, this whole concept of it only takes a irate minority. I'm very optimistic where Nashville is headed, and I think it's really important, Tom, to point this out. I've had this vision for a long time. I've felt for a long time, even pre-pandemic, the cause of liberty, Music City, Nashville, will be one of the most important cities that the cause of liberty can hold on to and have a victory. And it looks like this. You know, Nashville was a very important battleground for the Civil War. It had played a big part in the Civil War. Nashville was created by Chet Atkins as being this touring hub here because it's 200 miles in every direction is the most populated part of this country. You've got direct access to the South, the Deep South, the Southeast, the Midwest. That's why it's a great touring hub. It's also one of the biggest trucking hubs. And so I think as Nashville goes, the country goes. And because it is also the spiritual mecca of this country, most all Bibles are printed out of Franklin, Tennessee. You know, though I don't care for the a lot of the industry and the music they put out, the Christian music and the gospel. I like a lot more of the gospel music. But you know, the Christian music industry is here, the gospel industry, the Bibles are printed here. It's the most populated part of the country. We're the it city. So I have looked at Nashville as a very important place for the cause of liberty to win. And I've kind of inserted myself as a leader and said, well, I'm going to focus on this because I know it's important. I think Nashville very much is kind of the lifeblood of this country because, you know, so much of the music, people don't realize, and we talked about this a little bit, Tom, how there's a lot more than just country music happening here. And there always has been. You know, Jimi Hendrix was stationed at Fort Campbell and he was hanging out on Jefferson Street back in his army days. And that's where he met Buddy Cox and you know, and created, was playing with people like Little Richard down on Jefferson Street. There's always been a blues, you know, soul kind of scene. There's always been a great jazz scene. And there's more rock records being made in the studios in Nashville than LA or New York these days. So Nashville is very, very important to the cause of liberty. And I'm seeing great victories and great people come together. And it's very encouraging.
Dan, do you have a website or anywhere I can link people to who want to follow you or just find out more about you?
Absolutely. DanHagenMusic.com. That's H-A-G-E-N. And then MusicCityRevival.live is my the label that my podcast. And then, of course, you can go to iTunes to Music City Revival and hear my podcast.
All right. Very good. I'll put links to this stuff up at tomwoods.com/2017. Well, thank you for the information about what's been going on there. And I think also this can help people who are considering relocating. There are many. And now they have another option.
And we want some liberty-minded musicians to come here. And we've got work for you. And I also want to point out, I'm at Toy Box Studio, at Liz Shaw's studio, which, you know, it's been an incredible thing, and it's an amazing opportunity right here to be at Liz's studio recording this podcast. Liz is like number one on iTunes as podcast recording rock stars, and then to be interviewed on the Tom Woods Show, which is my favorite podcast I've been listening to for years. I have to say how much peace it brings me to be connected with the two of you, and how you two have been connected, and how much mutual admiration it is. You know, liberty really does bring people together, and it's such a wonderful thing. And so, you know, so I want to thank Liz, you know, for having me here. And he is somebody that has stood up for the cause of liberty. So if you need a recording studio, you know, talk to Liz.
All right. I'm sitting here. I didn't get it done in time. I was about to do a quick Google search to see, or I beg your pardon, a social media search to see. And sure enough, he does have, thetoyboxstudio.com.
Yeah.
So you can use Liz's amazing studio there. So again, think about whether you're a musician or not. We had a great time in Nashville, and Tennessee's got other places too, although I would, if I moved there, I'd want to be in the Nashville area. But we had a great time. There are a lot of great folks there. There's a Tom Woods meetup group there. I mean, it's not via meetup.com, but there's a group of folks who meet on a regular basis at one of the places. And so you're not going to be alone. Anyway, now I'm going to get all the Free Staters in New Hampshire saying, hey, why didn't you talk about New Hampshire? All right, well, you guys come back on. We'll talk a little bit more about New Hampshire.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, Dan, and continued good luck. Hope to see you again soon.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate you and all you're doing.
All right, folks, that'll do it for today. Tomorrow on the program, Judge Andrew Napolitano joins us once again. We're going to be talking about the FBI and the CIA. So it's going to be ugly, but it needs to be heard. And remember, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, then you belong inside the Tom Woods Show Elite, which is my private discussion group full of normal people who are really smart and who will help keep you sane during these continually insane times. I might also add that I do special events with my supporters around the country. I've done events at my own home. But sometimes when I'm out of town, I'll say, hey, any supporters in this city, let's get together and do an escape room, have a bite to eat or whatever. And I'll be doing more of that in 2022 than I have for the past couple of years. So check it out, supportinglisteners.com. Lots of goodies you get for supporting the Tom Woods Show, and lots of unannounced bonuses like the ones I just mentioned. So go check that out, supportinglisteners.com. Warm the heart of the old man here, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.